Shalom, welcome to Ask JTF, the program in which we attempt to answer questions from our great JTFers. I'm Chaim Ben Pesach from the Jewish Task Force. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Mitman, Shlomo Ben Sara, Dorit Bat Sara, and Moshe Ben Miriam, and to Ilui Neshamot, elevating of the souls, for Malka Bat Meir, Allegra Bat Shlomo, Daniel Nankin, Victor Hasdai, Pesach Zev Ben Dov, Lunita Adler, Shifra Hoffman, Ruben Hoffman, Barry Hoffman, Harab Meir Kahana, Harab Binyamin Kahana, Tzipora Fegi, Bat Liba, Yosef Ben Meir, Robert Mitman, Dennis Shore, Helen Friedman, and Charles Zolat. On this week's program, I want to discuss the difference between so-called practical Jews and Jewish idealists. And I want to speak about Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the greatest Jew and the greatest human being in history, Moshe Rabbeinu being Moses. And whether or not he was practical or idealistic, what did he do in his lifetime when he could have taken the practical road or could have taken the idealistic road? And why is this relevant? This is relevant because we're going to discuss why the road taken by the true idealists, the heroic hilltop youth, is the correct one, and why Morenu v'Rabbeinu Harav Meir David Kahana Zecher Tzadik v'Kadosh Livracha Hashem Yikom Damo, our great beloved Rabbi Meir Kahana, blessed memory, may God avenge his blood, was right in being an idealist and in taking the idealistic road and in not compromising on his principles. He was right, and all the so-called practical Jews and all his critics were wrong. We're going to explain that, including people now that are running for the Knesset who were once called, especially one of them, Itamar Ben-Gvir, who claims he was once a Kahanist and now he criticizes Rabbi Kahana and says he doesn't agree with Rabbi Kahana. He's completely wrong. And we're going to explain why, and we're going to explain why it's not only wrong in terms of principles, it's not only wrong in terms of morals, it's also wrong in terms of what you will actually achieve in this world, because you won't achieve what you set out to achieve if you violate your principles in the end. In the long run, being honest and truthful and true to your principles will always pay off in the long run. Let's start with the story of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was, in effect, adopted by the daughter of Paro, Pharaoh, in Egypt, because Paro issued an edict, a gezerah, an edict neged the firstborn Hebrew baby boys, to drown them in the Nile River. And in order to save his life, his mother and Moses' mother and sister put him in a situation where he would be, where they put him in the Nile River, and eventually the daughter of Paro found him and she adopted him. Now, once he was adopted, he immediately tremendously impressed Pharaoh. Pharaoh, by the way, was the most powerful ruler in the world by far. Egypt was the premier empire in the world, with the dominant culture and the dominant role in world affairs at that time, similar to the United States today. And Pharaoh was very impressed with Moshe Rabbeinu, with his brilliance, with his talent, with his personality and his character. And Moshe Rabbeinu became like a son to Pharaoh. Moshe Rabbeinu was being raised in Pharaoh's Armon, in his castle, or in his palace, and he became like a son to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh intended to make Moshe Rabbeinu his successor. He would have been Pharaoh's successor. But Moshe Rabbeinu saw what was happening to his people, to the Hebrew slaves. He saw the oppression and the suffering of his people, and he couldn't tolerate that. Now, if he had been practical, if he had listened to the AIPAC Jews and the ADL Jews and the UJA Jews and all the self-hating Jewish traitors of the Jewish establishment, and to the Jews with kippot on their heads, who are practical from the Young Israel and all these other, and Orthodox Union and all these other organizations from the establishment, if he had listened to them when they say, be practical, you're not realistic. And that's how most of them, by the way, speak. If he had listened to them, he would have just will maybe try to influence Pharaoh from within, try to influence him here and there to help the Hebrew slaves here and there from within, work from within. You shouldn't work from without. That's not practical. And eventually he would have become Pharaoh, and he could, and when, if he became Pharaoh, he could release the Hebrew slaves. If he became Pharaoh, he could free them. And he could do all types of things to help them even. He could even send the powerful Egyptian army, which was the most powerful and feared army in the world. He could have sent them to the land of Israel, liberated the land of Israel. If he was Pharaoh, he could have liberated the land of Israel, given it to the Jewish people on a silver platter. So that's the practical thing to do. Work from within. You can influence more from within. And then if you become the leader, look what you can do. Look at all the things you can do if you become the leader. So why not do it that way? Moses, Moshe Rabbeinu, did not choose that path. He rebelled against the oppression that Pharaoh and his regime were engaged in against the Hebrew slaves. And when he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew slave, he killed the Egyptian, killed him and buried him in the sand. And then Pharaoh found out about it, and he had to, and Moses had to flee. Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe had to flee Egypt, and he left Egypt for 40 years. That's certainly not practical. Look what you imagine all the practical Jews, what they'd be saying. Look what you gave up. You had a chance to become Pharaoh. You had a chance to free all the slaves. Look what you could have done. How stupid, how crazy. What are you, some hot-headed extremist or fanatic? What's wrong with you? Look what you could have done. You lost this opportunity. Now you're nowhere. Now you're nobody. Who's going to pay attention to you now? And he had to flee for his life, Moses, from being the successor to Pharaoh with tremendous power and the ability to become the most powerful leader in the world as king of Egypt. Instead, he became a fugitive who had to hide to save his life from the Egyptian authorities. What did he accomplish? And yet we see that the path Moses took was the correct path. The Jews could have been freed, and by the way, the fact that Moses had to flee for 40 years and so on and so forth, he could have saved the Jews right then and there before, without going through the 40 years of extra suffering and slavery. Unfortunately, though, the Jews were not going to be freed because they weren't worthy of being freed, because they were malshinim, they were informers. They wanted to inform on him and tell Pharaoh what he did. They wanted to snitch on him, like the Yesha Council and Nachala and these other organizations in Israel that rat on the hilltop youth. Or people like Itamar Ben-Gvir's latest candidate for the Knesset. His latest candidate for the Knesset was part of the police that beat Jewish, part of the police force that in Judea and Samaria they beat and physically attack Jewish heroes on the hilltops, beat their women even, something which they would never dare do. They would never dare do something like this against Arabs. And he was part of the Mishmar HaGvul, the border guard, which are brutal toward the Jews in Judea and Samaria. Again, they don't do that to Arabs. Arabs they're very nice to. Jews they're brutal towards, especially good Jews. And Itamar Ben-Gvir picks him to run for the Knesset, picks this policeman, this snitch, this rat, to run with him for the Knesset, who's also, by the way, a racist, neged Ashkenazi Jews, who wrote racist things against Ashkenaz, wrote all types of racist posts on Twitter, which he has now deleted because he's running for the Knesset, wrote racist posts against Ashkenazi Jews. And Itamar Ben-Gvir also, by the way, at one time in 2007, appointed and defended Uzi Zalka, who was the manager of his, who was the not the manager, but in English you don't say manager, in Hebrew you say manager, but the administrator, the admin of his forum. Uzi Zalka, who said it's good that there was a Holocaust against the Ashkenazi Jews. They deserve it. And Itamar Ben-Gvir refused to get rid of Uzi Zalka. So, this is this is what we're up against, practical people like this, who take the practical route, or we could take somebody with principles like Moses, who decided, you know, who decided, no, I'm gonna act now to free the Hebrew slaves, but they weren't worthy of being free. God was not willing to free them at that time because they were malshinim, because they were informers among them. And so Moses had to wait 40 years. He had to flee and wait 40 years. And when he came back 40 years later, again, he didn't take the practical path. He took the path of confronting Pharaoh, of confronting him and saying that the God of Israel has chosen the Jewish people and that he has to do what the God of Israel tells him to do. Now, eventually, Moses did free the Hebrew slaves. And even then, by the way, only 20% of the Hebrews left Egypt with Moses. You know that 80% of them stayed in Egypt and either were assimilated, that there are different opinions among the rabbis, among Chazal, whether they were assimilated and disappeared among the Egyptian people or whether they were killed in the plague of darkness. Makat HaChoshech, which was the plague of darkness. So, but 80% of the of the Hebrews in Egypt at that time did not leave with Moses. Even after all the miracles, even after the 10 plagues, they did not leave. They wanted to stay in Egypt. They wanted to stay in the flesh pots of Egypt instead of going with Moses because it was too idealistic, too impractical. They wanted to be practical. We have yeshivas in Egypt. We have batei knesiot in Egypt. We have synagogues in Egypt. We have respectable organizations, and look at how much money we earn, and look how comfortable we are, and we have big Jewish communities, and why should we leave and go with Moses to the desert? That's crazy. Impractical. Be practical. Be practical. Be a pragmatist. Or be a pragmatist. Be a pragmatist. Anyway, Moses and the 20% of the Jews that left Egypt didn't take that path. And look what happened. Look what happened. They got the Torah at Mount Sinai. And eventually they sinned. The Hebrews unfortunately sinned and were forced to wander in the desert for 40 years, something that didn't have to happen. But they had to wander in the desert 40 years. But eventually they came back. They came back to the land of Israel. They liberated the land of Israel. And we see Jewish history unfold. Because of that, we have the Torah, we have the laws of Moses, and we have all these other great things that have lasted for thousands of years because of that. If Moses had been Pharaoh and had taken the path of being an Egyptian and had taken the practical path, none of that would have happened. We wouldn't have had any of the wonderful miracles and any of the wonderful things that prove the existence of God. The world would not have seen that it's God's hand that is liberating the Hebrew slaves. The Jews would not have seen that. There wouldn't have been faith with emunah within the Jewish people, and the power and ability because of that emunah to survive thousands of years of persecution and trials and tribulations. It was because Moses took the idealistic path that the Jewish people exist, and that thousands of years later the Jewish people have again returned to the land of Israel, and this time this Israel will lead to the redemption of the whole world eventually, to the final redemption. But none of that would happen if Moses had taken the practical path. If Moses had said, well, I have to listen to the UJA Federation of the Upper Nile, or I have to listen to the AIPAC conference in Cairo, and I have to be practical, and after all, and let's be realistic, don't be a zealot, don't be too extreme. Moses took the so-called impractical path, and that will lead to the final redemption of the world, because taking the idealistic path and standing up for the truth in the end does pay off. Our leader, Rabbi Kahana, also took the idealistic path, and he was banned from the Knesset and murdered because of it. But he liberated 2 million Jews from the Soviet Union. Something which, if he had been practical, would never have happened. If he had been practical and listened to the practical people and had become a famous, big, wealthy, charismatic rabbi in the United States, which is what people urged him to do, people in JDL, the practical people, who said to him, no, don't go on Aliyah, don't go to Israel. What are you going to Israel for? You have a lot of supporters here. You may here you can have lots of money and everything else, and then you can influence Israel, and then you can influence people from within. You can influence. He didn't take that path. He took the impractical path, and he paid with his life for it. But he freed 2 million Soviet Jews, and he created the ideology and the philosophy that we see on the hilltops of Judea and Samaria today, that someday will be the ideology of the Jewish people as a whole. He led the way for what will eventually be the great awakening of the Jewish people that the prophets in the Bible speak of. And Itamar Ben-Gvir now criticizes him and says he generalized and stereotyped the Arabs. He generalized and stereotyped the Arabs. Itamar Ben-Gvir is lying to the Jewish people when he says that. Itamar Ben-Gvir, who is now a big Netanyahu supporter, a Netanyahu who supported giving the whole Sinai to Egypt, which led to the catastrophe of hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens from Africa flooding into Israel through the Sinai. If Israel had stayed in Sinai, we wouldn't have had the invasion of Israel by hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens from Africa, who are turning Israeli cities into nightmare zones. And we wouldn't have had the problem where Israelis now pay hundreds of dollars to fill their tanks, for gas now. The prices are so outrageous and so insane in Israel, because Israel doesn't have the oil in Sinai. The Jews discovered enough oil in Sinai to make Israel self-sufficient for the next 100 years, and to make Israel a net exporter of oil. Israel would have earned tens of billions of dollars. Israel gave all of that oil that they discovered and developed, all the Sinai oil fields, to Egypt. And Egypt now uses it against the Jews to bring illegal aliens into Israel and to do all the other things that Egypt does against the Jews. Egypt is that we don't have peace with Egypt at all. They're waiting for the moment when Israel will be weak enough to attack again. That day will yet come. And Netanyahu supported the surrender of all of Sinai to Egypt. And Netanyahu gave 13% of Judea and Samaria to the Arab Hitler Yasser Arafat when in the Y agreement, which was an extension of the Oslo agreements. Netanyahu continued Oslo, the Oslo process. And Netanyahu surrendered 97% of Hebron, Ir Avotenu, Hebron, the city of our forefathers. 97% of it he surrendered to Arafat in 1996. And Netanyahu froze Jewish building in Judea and Samaria during almost all of the 15 years he was prime minister, something which even Israeli left-wing prime ministers never did. He froze building in eastern Jerusalem for most of the time that he was prime minister, something which left-wing Israeli prime ministers didn't do. And Itamar Ben-Gvir says, I love and ani marich ve'ohev et Bibi Netanyahu. Ani marich ve'ohev means I admire and respect and love Benjamin Netanyahu. He loves him. Benjamin Netanyahu, who released thousands of Arab Muslim Nazi terrorist murderers with Jewish blood on their hands, but never release Jewish prisoners who defended the Jewish people and go to jail for long periods of time for defending the Jewish people against Arab terrorism. Anyway, there's the practical path and there's the idealistic path. The so-called practical path, in reality, is impractical. The practical Jews are the most impractical people. Remember, before the Holocaust, the practical Jews stayed in Europe. It was impractical to go to the land of Israel, like some desert there, and we're surrounded by 100 million Arabs who want to slaughter us, and the whole world's against us, and how do we survive there, and there's no means to survive, and people are starving there. That's crazy. Stay in Europe. In Europe, let's be practical. And they stayed in Europe. They didn't listen to Jabotinsky. They stayed in Europe. And look what happened during the Holocaust. The impractical, idealistic Jews went to Israel. And look what happened to them. They survived. And even within Europe, even the Jews who were foolish enough to remain in Europe, even there, we have the practical versus the idealists. In Yugoslavia, most of the Jews listened to the German Nazis and were slaughtered. They listened. They went on. They were willing to cooperate and go to the Nazi concentration camps because they felt you have to be practical. What are we going to do? The Jewish idealists, when the Serbs offered to save their lives, they said, "Come fight with us in the mountains. Let's fight against the Germans in the mountains. Fight together with us. We'll fight together." The Jewish idealists who did that survived. But anyway, some Jews never learn. They never learn. That's one thing we learn from Jewish history, is that many Jews never learn. And that's tragic. It's the practical, it's the idealistic Jews who are the real practical Jews. It's the idealistic Jews who will pave the road for redemption for the Jewish people and for the world. And those idealistic Jews are on the hilltops of Judea and Samaria. They're the hilltop youth heroes. JTF is the only organization that supports them financially. They do raise money by themselves in Israel. But outside of their own direct fundraising operation, the only outside organization that backs them and sends them money is JTF. And yes, we send them our whole budget because they deserve it. No one else deserves our whole budget. They deserve it. What would happen if all the Jews in Israel were like the hilltop youth? What type of Israel would we have? And not even all the Jews. Let's say a large percentage of the Jews were like the hilltop youth. You'd go to Israel and you'd meet these idealists who were willing to sacrifice everything for the land of Israel, filled with love for the Jewish people. What would happen if these magnificent, beautiful souls were a large part of the Jewish population? What type of world would we have? What type of Israel would we have? What would Hashem, what would God do for us then? There are two ways that you can support the Hilltop Youth. One is by going to our Hebrew website, hayamin.org. Now, most of it is in Hebrew, that's true, but on top there's a donate button in English, a large donate button in English that you can click on top. And you can very conveniently, in several minutes, help the Hilltop Youth generously. And you should help them generously. They're giving their whole lives for the Jewish people, they and their families. The least we can do is back them. If you want to do it through the regular mail, instead of doing it online, you can send checks and money orders to our post office box. You can make the checks and money orders out to JTF, which is our political organization that engages in political activities in Israel but is not tax exempt. Or you can give it to VJA. VJA is the Voice of Jewish Activism. If you make the check or money order out to VJA, it's fully tax deductible and you can claim it on your taxes. If you itemize, you can claim it on your taxes. You send your checks and money orders out to JTF, P.O. Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York, 11365. Again, JTF PO Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York, 11365. If you don't agree with me that we have to be idealists and support the idealists, then JTF is not for you. But if you do agree, this is the cause and you're in the right place. This is the organization that you have chosen to be part of, and Baruch Hashem, thank God, that at least you understand that idealism is the practical route in the end. In the long run, it always pays off. Let's go now to our questions from our great JTFers. And we start off with the great Hirvatsky Noachide, who always asks interesting questions. And Hirvatsky asked this week, 1. Why do Jews visit and pray at the Western Wall in Jerusalem? There's no Torah law or rabbinical obligation to congregate there or at the site of any other monument, unquote. A great question. Because the wall, it doesn't have a direct connection to Beit HaMikdash, to the Holy Temple, but there was an indirect connection that's in the vicinity of the Holy Temple, and so it's sort of like an attempt to say, well, you know, we're here because we want to identify with the Holy Temple. We want to be close to the Holy Temple, and so it's our way of going to the Holy Temple and and showing that we want to be close to Beit HaMikdash, as if it's part of Beit HaMikdash, which it's technically not. Technically it's not, but indirectly there's a connection there because it's very close. I don't think there's anything wrong with praying at the Western Wall, but I would agree with you. I think it's much more praiseworthy to actually go onto the Temple Mount and go there. Jews are not allowed to pray on the Temple Mount. Jews are not allowed because it offends Muslims. And Muslims have been given effective control of the Temple Mount. It's such a disgrace. It's such a chilul Hashem. It's such a desecration of God's name. But it's something that has to be changed. Hidovatsky now writes, and I quote too, "Someone recognized me as the Hidovatsky Noahide from your videos and asked your opinion of the Dalai Lama," unquote. I don't know enough about the Dalai Lama to comment on it. I don't really know. I know that the Dalai Lama, if what he preaches represents a form of Buddhism, Buddhism is an atheistic religion. I don't know. If that's true, that's not good. And if what he preaches is Avodah Zarah, is idolatry, then it wouldn't be good. And I don't know what his position is on Israel. I just don't know enough, Hirvatsky, and I wouldn't want to say something bad about somebody if it was unjustified, and I also don't want to praise somebody if it's unjustified. So I apologize, but I'm just not well informed enough on the subject. Thank you, Hirvatsky. And we go now to our friend Ram Sheva Sheva Efes, who gets us interviews and gets us with thousands of views in Israel and helps us reach thousands of Jews who are not part of our, we have the religious nationalist community that we reach in Israel through the Hilltop Youth and we pay for their, in the Shabbat newsletters, we pay for their columns there. So we reach a lot of Jews in Israel with our message because of that. But that's only within the religious nationalist camp, which is maybe 15% of the Israeli Jewish population, maybe 20%, 15 to 20%. But we also want to reach our fellow Jews that are not part of that, that are outside of that group. And Ram helps us do that because he gets us interviews. Ram, מה שאני אמרתי באנגלית, אנחנו עכשיו מגיעים ליהודים במחנה הדתי הלאומי, כי אנחנו תורמים כסף ואנחנו מממנים את הטורים של נערי הגברות שמגיעים להרבה יהודים במחנה הדתי הלאומי, אבל אנחנו לא מגיעים להרבה יהודים מחוץ למחנה הדתי הלאומי. ואתה עוזר לנו להגיע להם עם כל הרעיונות שאתה סידרת בשבילנו. ואנחנו מודים לך על זה, וזה מה שאני אמרתי באנגלית, כדי שכולם באנגלית גם ידעו כל מה שהשגת. Ram writes now, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim HaTzadik, מה שלומך? מקווה שהיה לך רעיון מוצלח עם משה פבריקנט, גם מתי נוכל לקבוע תאריך זום, שהקדוש ברוך הוא יברך אותך באהבת ישראל, רם מאיר אברהם." And Ram is asking me about a particular interview that I did with an 18-year-old who has a website, who has a YouTube page, and who reaches thousands of young Jews who are not religious nationalists. And I did the interview with him, and I thought it was a very successful interview. He's going to upload it. He's going to upload it in about a week. He hasn't uploaded it yet, because he has a lot of interviews that he does with a lot of people. But he plans to upload in about a week, and I think it was very successful. Ani choshev Ram shehareayon sheli im Moshe hayta hatzlacha. Ani choshev shetehaneh kesheta tireh etze. Ani modeh lecha Ram. And now we go to Truth Spreader. Truth Spreader, you put together a YouTube page where you were uploading parts of our videos to spread the word about JTF. And I thought that was a great thing you were doing. Unfortunately, the criminals of YouTube censored you. But there are other sites also, by the way, where you can do this on other sites as well. And I urge people to do what Truth Spreader was trying to do. He was taking parts of our videos and uploading them. And, and reaching other people with our message. Truth Spreader writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, I know this is comparing the Flintstones to the Jetsons, but would you please compare Africa to Japan? On one hand, Japan is one of the most technologically advanced countries, while none of the African countries come anywhere near that," unquote. Well, Japan is a very advanced, educated, and talented country with very intelligent and talented people. Unfortunately, like most Western countries, and I know Japan is not considered to be Western because it's in Asia, but it has a Western, it sort of has a Western culture in many respects, and they're not having children. So they're having negative population growth, so they have a serious problem, and that's true in all the Western countries. Whereas Africa has a population explosion now. Africa, which is not where the people are not intelligent and cruel and vicious and murderous and jealous people live there, and I'm not saying every single last African is like that, but most of them are. Most of them are very cruel, vicious, jealous, ignorant people. They're not talented, they're not intelligent, they don't contribute to the world, and they're having a huge population explosion, and that's going to be a danger to the world. That's going to be bad for the world. Thank you, Truth Spreader. And now we go to Joe Gutfeld, our friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, what do you think about the no-bail law in New York State? Do you think that if Lee Zeldin wins the election for governor that he should get rid of this policy? Thanks," unquote. God forbid that Lee Zeldin should win the race for governor. God forbid. Let me remind you, Joe, that George Pataki was governor of New York for 12 years. He was like Lee Zeldin. He was a phony left-wing Republican, a Rockefeller Republican, and so is Lee Zeldin, by the way. And George Pataki outspent Cuomo. He gave us bigger budgets and higher taxes and higher property taxes and other oppressive measures than Cuomo. He absolutely devastated this state during the 12 years he was governor. He sold out on every single issue. Pataki, before that, Nelson Rockefeller. These left-wing Republicans are a disaster, a catastrophe, and Lee Zeldin is a left-wing Republican. And he's a self-hating Jew. And having a self-hating Jew in office is a desecration of God's name. We don't want him. I intend to vote, even though you know I hate the Democrats. And I hate Hochul, whatever her name is, the Democrat governor that we have. She's a horrible, evil woman, a left-wing pig. She's not really left-wing. She's an opportunist. She's a political prostitute. But anyway, I despise her. But I intend to vote for her just to defeat Lee Zeldin, because I always support the Gentile candidate, even if the Gentile candidate is terrible, and Hochul is a terrible person, terrible governor, over the self-hating Jewish candidate, Lee Zeldin. By the way, Lee Zeldin, of course, defends gay marriage and the transgenders he defends. And, I mean, he's just a sickening person, and he's intermarried. His wife is not Jewish, he's intermarried. Just sickening. We want that as the example for a so-called Jewish governor of New York, God forbid. Be terrible. Thank you, Joe. And now we go to our friend Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, "One, did you support the first Trump impeachment?" I don't know. There was never any chance of removing Trump from office, because to convict him, you can impeach him with a House majority, but in the Senate, you need a two-thirds majority to convict and remove from office. So there was never a chance of it. It was never serious. I didn't think it was a serious thing. I did think that Trump was involved with Russia in a dirty way, in a corrupt way, and I still believe that Putin has something on him. But, you know, there was the hypocrisy in the Trump. Of course there was. The Democrats are also terrible. But still, the whole thing wasn't serious. And now Benjamin writes, did you support the second Trump impeachment? Again, not serious. You can't remove a president from office unless you have a two-thirds majority in the Senate, which the Republicans don't even have anything close to that. There was no chance of that ever happening. So I didn't think it was anything serious, Benjamin. And now Benjamin writes, and I quote, "Discuss the following people." Oh boy, we got some list here of terrible people. Walter Mondale. Walter Mondale was vice president under Jimmy Carter, an anti-Semite who who went to Camp David when Begin and Sadat were meeting at Camp David, and pressured Begin to give up the entire Sinai, a cursed, vicious, evil pig, Walter Mondale, left-wing pig, the lowest and a coward, the worst. He was the Democrat nominee, by the way, for president against Ronald Reagan in 1984. Just a terrible, horrible, evil person. And next, Spiro Agnew. Spiro Agnew was the vice president under Richard Nixon, and a vicious anti-Semite who started making anti-Semitic speeches and blaming the Jews for the fact that he was forced to resign from office. He was forced to resign from office because he took a bribe. He was taking bribes. He was a corrupt crook. And he blamed the Jews for it, this Nazi pig. Scum. Nelson Rockefeller. Nelson Rockefeller, like all the Rockefellers, represents pure evil. This is a family of evil. Everywhere they went, all they did is spread evil. They supported the Nazis in Germany. They supported the communists in Russia. They supported evil because they wanted to cut deals and make deals. And they support destroying American sovereignty. Rockefeller was the governor of New York and devastated the state of New York, gave New York the highest tax rates in the country by far, the highest spending by far. Nelson Rockefeller, the so-called Republican, did all of this. Sabotaged the Republican Party nationally. Was just a grotesque individual in every way. Geraldine Ferraro, she was the vice presidential candidate under Walter Mondale. When Mondale and Ferraro ran in 1984 against Ronald Reagan for president, Ferraro was Mondale's running mate for vice president. Also, corrupt, phony. She was caught up in all types of scandals. A complete phony, left-wing hypocrite. She became a big feminist. She was never a feminist. All phony. All completely phony. Ross Perot. Ross Perot ran for president in 1992 and in 1996. He actually got 19% of the vote in 1992. He would have gotten more, but he was so wacky, was so crazy. He pulled out of the race. He said that Black Panthers were threatening to interrupt his daughter's wedding. Just nutty, crazy stuff that he came up with. If not for that, he was a billionaire, and people were very fed up with the two major party candidates, Bill Clinton and George Bush Senior. And so he potentially could have actually won the presidency, but he was nuts. Jacob Lew, Orthodox Jew and Secretary of Treasury from 2013 to 2017. Yimash Mozakro, filthy pig, a so-called Orthodox Jew who was an Obama supporter, supported Farrakhan's president, Obama. The so-called Orthodox Jew supporting an Obama president and supporting all the left-wing Democrat anti-Semites. His whole life he was a left-wing Democrat anti-Semite and calls himself an Orthodox Jew. Supporting Obama when Obama was pressuring Israel to commit suicide. A black Muslim Farrakhan supporter in the White House. That's who Jacob Lew supported and loyally served him as Secretary of the Treasury and was a terrible Secretary of the Treasury. And now the final person on Binyamin's list, Chelsea Clinton. Chelsea Clinton is the daughter, of course, of Bill Clinton. She was supposed to run for public office. They were saying she was going to run for public office like her parents did, like Bill and Hillary did. She never did. A horrible, disgusting person. I think she's married to a Jew. I'm not sure, Binyamin. Binyamin knows a lot about these things. Binyamin is very well informed. So, maybe you can educate us on this. You can respond and educate us on this. I think she's married to a Jew, if I'm not mistaken. So just a catastrophe. Her and her parents, of course, always worked to pressure Israel to commit suicide. Terrible, terrible, evil, an evil pig. Thank you, Binyamin. And Binyamin, this week I did answer you on every single person on your list. I went into detail, right? Okay, Binyamin, thank you for your question. And now we go to Kalman Ben Menachem, who always asks great questions. And Kalman writes, and I quote, Chaim, what do you think of, one, former Congresswoman Elizabeth Holtzman? Ugh. JTF really went against her. She ran for the Senate in 1980. She ran for the Senate. And she ran for the Senate, I think, in 1992, if I'm not mistaken. I don't remember if she ran two times or three times. She was a horrible person. Horrible left-wing feminist, closet lesbian, terrible person. Her name, we coined the term Elizabeth Holtz person. I remember seeing Al D'Amato by accident. I saw him on the street campaigning in Queens. He was campaigning. Al D'Amato was the Republican candidate who ran against Elizabeth Holt's person. Elizabeth Holt's person was running for the Senate. She won the Democrat nomination in 1980. She was running for the Senate, and D'Amato beat her, by the way, by just one percentage point. Thank God he defeated her. But he was running against her. It was a very close race. And I saw him on the street, and I went, you know, I went up to him, and I said to him, you know, and I said to him, well, I hope you defeat Elizabeth Holt's person. And he broke out laughing. He said, I love it, Holt's person. And he called someone from his staff. He says, write that down, Elizabeth Holt's person. And he started calling her Elizabeth Holt's person during the campaign. He started using it. True story. And he ended up defeating her by one percentage point. It was very close. She would have been disastrous. She was so left-wing. And now Kalman asked me about former Congressman Stephen Solars. Thank you, Kalman Ben Menachem. Okay, Stephen Solars was a congressman from Brooklyn, also left-wing congressman, corrupt. He was involved in what was called the check-writing scandal, the House banking scandal. People don't even remember that. I don't want to go into detail, Kalman, about what the House banking scandal was, because it would probably be boring to our viewers, but... it was a scandal, and he wrote dozens and dozens of checks on the House on the House bank, which he wasn't supposed to do. And he was, you know, and so he was defeated when he ran for Congress for re-election. He ended up being defeated, and that was good because he was a left-wing traitor who wanted Israel to commit suicide, who wanted Israel to surrender everything. Thank you, Kalman. And we now go to Scandinavian Noahide, who writes, and I quote: "One, what do you think of Sir Oswald Mosley? He is often portrayed as a violent anti-Semite who was a big supporter of Hitler, yimach shmo. However, I do not believe this to be true after hearing his actual opinions from his own mouth," unquote. Scandinavian Noahide, I can't believe you're writing this. I can't believe you're writing this. You can't be serious. Oswald Mosley was the head of the Nazis in Britain. He was the leader for the Nazis in Britain who supported Hitler. Adolf Hitler attended his wedding. He went to Nazi Germany to get married in Nazi Germany, and Hitler was his guest of honor at his wedding. And all the Nazi war criminals and beasts of during the Holocaust were his guests at the wedding. Are you kidding me? He headed something called the British Union of Fascists and openly supported the Nazis. And even after the war began between Britain and Germany, he advocated British surrender to the Nazis. He called it a peace. We got that peace. It meant, which meant surrender to the Nazis. I mean, you're kidding me? You got to be joking. He was an open Nazi. And you're saying he was portrayed as a violent anti-Semite? He openly said that his struggle is against Jewish control of the media. And he went through all the things that the Nazis say. That the Jews are controlling the British media and controlling British commerce and controlling British industry and controlling... The Jews control everything. He was spreading the Nazi... He was the spokesman for Nazi propaganda in Britain. Throughout his life. You've got to be kidding me. And you support this filth? You can't be a Noahide and support Nazis. And the second question, what do you think of former Congressman Ron Paul? Another Jew hater, another Nazi. This is someone who his opinions on Israel are so anti, he's so anti-Israel and so anti-Semitic. So is his son, by the way. I mean, just very anti-Israel. There were times when there were votes taken about the Holocaust, about other issues, where the vote in the Congress was 410-1, let's say, to commemorate the Holocaust or something like that, some issue like that. Ron Paul would be the only one voting against it. I mean, viciously anti-Israel, viciously anti-Semitic. Terrible. Terrible. And he worked... And by the way, Ron Paul put out a newsletter with Holocaust deniers and openly... And went to conferences with Holocaust deniers, openly supporting enemies of... not only enemies of the Jewish people, but Nazis. Holocaust deniers are Nazis. He was an anti-Semite and a Nazi. Okay, next question comes from the great Italian Zionist, who writes, and I quote, "Hi Chaim, regarding the money for the Hilltop, 100% goes to them, correct? None of the contributions goes to admin, website, or other costs. I've been telling people that 100% goes to Hilltop Youth. Just wanted to confirm, by the way, I'm talking to a rich semi-religious Jew in the entertainment business who will hopefully contribute a large sum, unquote. Great, great news. And yes, 100% goes to the Hilltops. But you're asking me about admin. There's no money goes to administrative costs. We don't have that. The website, on the other hand, we do have to pay for the website. We have what's called a dedicated server for the website, and we have to. We pay every month for the dedicated server on the website, for someone to host a dedicated server for us, so that we can have our forum and our websites. That we do pay for every month. I think it's $120 a month, and we pay a company that protects our website from attacks. A famous company that is used by many websites to protect us from attacks, because we were under attack for years. And the company's been doing a pretty good job. We are under attack frequently, but they don't succeed because of the protection that we've gotten here. So yes, we do pay for the website. Some of the money does go to website, but that's part of this cause. That's part of the. We need the website to raise money. We need the website. So that we do. That is the one cost that we do have. If you want to know what are the costs, that we do have that cost. It's roughly 1%, I would say, of our budget. The paying for the website and for the protection for the website is probably about 1% of our budget. The rest of our money, all of it goes to Israel. Our entire budget goes to Israel. And when we say Israel, I'm referring, of course, to the struggle of the heroic Hilltop Youth. Okay, Italian Zionist now writes, and I quote, "Two, for the last 2 years, I've noticed Queens has gone extremely downhill. Unfortunately, in addition to the mayor, I blame the police. They do absolutely nothing. Last week, there were over 100 motorcycles, scooters, and dirt bikes. Last week, there were over 100 motorcycle scooters and dirt bikes were identified with no plates, insurance, etc. on Woodhaven Boulevard. I see these bastards pass red lights." I was debating whether or not to use the word, but okay, I'll use the word because it's a word that does appear in Hebrew, even in the Bible. "Go to bus lanes and do 50 on local streets, and they use reflective plates so cameras don't catch them. Queens has become a combination of Planet of the Apes and Mad Max. Sadly, after living here a lifetime, I'm considering moving. Loud car radios, beasts, passing red lights, stop signs with impunity, etc. I had a fight with a beast the other day. I need to get out of here before I get myself killed. Is it bad where you are?" Unquote. First of all, every word that Italian Zionist is saying about Queens is true. Every single word he says here is true, and then some. Several blocks from my home, several blocks from my home, someone was murdered. And, you know, even neighborhoods that were considered to be good neighborhoods at one time are now, you have the spillover, black criminals coming into neighborhoods, and mostly black criminals and murderers and rapists and burglars coming into what were good neighborhoods with low crime rates. Giuliani, I don't like Giuliani because of his support for abortion and gays and gay marriage and all the other things that he supported. But he did drastically cut the crime rate and made the city a safer city. That's all gone now. And what Italian Zionist is writing is true. That's all true. Italian Zionist, I would advise you to be very careful not to go out and start fighting with crazy people, because they could be armed, they could have an illegal firearm on them, they could have a switchblade on them, God forbid, and we don't want you to get hurt. There are crazy people out there trying. I mean, sometimes you have to defend yourself. If you have to defend yourself, you have to defend yourself. You have no choice. But if you can avoid it, you don't want to get into a fight with people. You don't want to get into situations like that. I see people, I see beasts all the time. I especially want to avoid it because, you know, if I got into a situation with somebody, you know, with my past, they would say, "Oh, he's doing it because he's a racist." You know, right away they would hit me with hate crimes and who knows what. If I got into a fight with a black guy, they would say that I'm race crime. They would say I'm it's a hate crime, and they would blame me automatically. So, you want to avoid that, Italian Zionists, as much as possible. But it is bad. I can say that another neighborhood that I'm very familiar with, a predominantly Jewish neighborhood, I know that shots were fired into a car, and parts of the car strewn all over the street, one block away from someone who was a relative of mine, a family relative. I mean, just terrible what's going on, terrible. The consequences of appeasing evil criminals is that they take over the streets and they take over society and turn everything into a nightmare for us. It's a tragedy. The tougher you get with them, the better. Thank you, Italian Zionist, and I want to thank everybody for another program of JTF that I very much enjoy doing. And I just hope that people spread the word, people support us. If we work together as a team, we can make this a better world. We can change Jewish history. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.